They're not late.
Okay.
I mean, we're in business now, is what I'm trying to say.
We're in business, okay, good.
Okay. And, at the very end, all you have to do is star 9.
Okay.
I'm sometimes in and out, so letting you know.
Okay.
But star 9, I'm gonna stop. Stop recording. It's recording now. Okay.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon, everybody.
You know you're here. And we are the Institute for Policy Studies, truly, truly honored to welcome all of you here today. The Institute has been around for almost 50 years. Next year is our 50th anniversary. And I have to say, with this audience today, the Institute was started by two guys 27 years old. So from the start of the Institute, we have believed in the power of young people to make change, to bring things to life, and to bring about the better world that we all believe in. I'm Amira Woods. I'm with Foreign Policy in Focus here at the Institute. Foreign Policy in Focus is a network of about 800 writers that write progressive analysis on U.S. foreign policy, not just critiques, but what do we want, right? What are our recommendations for change in the world? So we are truly, truly honored today to be able to welcome our IPS Associate Fellow and American University Professor Carl Levan, who has convened this esteemed, amazing panel, and one of the panelists who's getting her keys, or let's say, to take her seat. But truly inspirational leaders that are providing a depth of analysis, that are providing a lens on not only their slice of the world, but the entire world, and from blogging to leadership, you know, in organizations. This is an extraordinary opportunity to hear what these young leaders are thinking about, what their lens is on Africa and the world, and we are so grateful for Professor Levan for having the vision to make this happen, for creating this space, and for selecting these wonderful leaders to present with us today. So you'll see, it will be sort of Carl as Oprah style, interactive. And we'll have an opportunity for all of you to be able to contribute as well. We are recording the session, so I hope that's okay with everybody. Yeah, so that people can access it after this event. And so with that, we are truly honored, and I'll turn it over to Carl. Welcome.
Thanks, Amira, and it's great to be an Associate Fellow here at IPS. And so when we get to opening up the discussion to the audience, please speak up, and if you would like to identify yourself, and that'll be caught for the recording, and we'll podcast this in some way. And I just want to mention a few things that inspired me or motivated me to bring these young people together to give you some background. As Amira said, I'm a professor at American University in the School of International Service, and I teach in comparative and regional studies, and my primary focus is Africa. And last summer, I was teaching for a few weeks at the University of Nairobi through the American Political Science Association. Every summer, they have an intensive workshop, all expenses paid, for 25 young PhDs, people who are about to get their PhDs or who have their PhDs from Africa, who are in Africa. And the idea is to team up two U.S.-based scholars and two African scholars and to train a new generation of social scientists and foster collaboration. And one of the things that came up at the very beginning of the workshop from the young African scholars, and again at the very end of the workshop from the young African scholars, was what they described as a generational shift. And they said, you know, the old generation trained in the United States, and they stayed. They fled the dictatorships of the 1970s and the 1980s. And for them, there were two issues. One was that this meant they were a little bit out of date in terms of what was happening on the continent and who the relevant players were back in the home country. And secondly, these scholars were concerned because they were the editors of the journals that they were trying to publish in. And they said, now this generation that's based in the US and Europe are these gatekeepers. and how do we get our views in? And this was the question that they posed at the very beginning of this workshop, at the very end of this workshop, and it was very profound for me because it was something that I had never thought about before, and much of my contact with African scholars have been here in the U.S. The second motivation for me was that I remembered that my own introduction to the Institute for Policy Studies many years ago was as a young person during the Gulf War and the mobilization, the military mobilization for the Gulf War. And I was involved with a group of students from every university across Washington, D.C. in mobilizing at the grassroots level a critique of U.S. foreign policy. And IPS invited me and several other student leaders to come and offer our critique. And I was so excited that somebody cared, that somebody was actually interested in my opinion, and feeling very empowered by that. And so I wanted to return to that memory now that I'm less young and I think back on these things. And I hope that we can provide a similar opportunity today for these young people. And the third motivation will also allow me to introduce the first of our speakers or respondents today. And that is, a few weeks ago, I was at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation annual conference, and I've been to maybe 9 or 10 of these in the last 18 years or so. And one of the last questions at the Africa Brain Trust was offered by Estelle Fumeju, who is to my far right. And I'm not going to ask her to restate her question, but she's from Cameroon. She's studying at Sciences Po and also studying abroad here in Washington, D.C. right now. And her question culminated with, I'm here in the U.S. And in France studying so that I can train to go back to my country to be a good leader. How much hypocrisy do I have to expect? How much hypocrisy do I need to tolerate when I go back home? And the room was stunned. And she said this to the Assistant Secretary of State for Africa. So I thought, wow, there's maybe a lack of vision in the questions that I'm formulating these days, and so I want to hear what people like Estelle have to say. So here we are. So next to Estelle is Jumoke Balogun, who's a Nigerian-American. She works for a union, one of the biggest unions and most important unions in the United States, the Service Employees International Union, and she's a co-founder of a very important blog called CompareAfrique.com. And so she does public relations for the union, and thank you for coming. She's also a master's degree alumna of American University. Next, we have Michael Apo, who is a native of Ghana, and he's studying African politics at Georgetown University. And then next, we have Mamkadi Diouf, who is a Senegalese national who works in the Africa program at the Woodrow Wilson Center for International Scholars. And then closest to me, we have Kizito Bienka, who's a program associate at the Open Society Institute from Uganda and also a co-publisher and co-founder of CompareAfrique.com. I'm mentioning their affiliations. They are, of course, speaking as individuals today and not on behalf of any of these organizations. And we'll refer to each other on a first name basis. And maybe if you speak, if once we get a little bit of banter going, if you'll just state your name again for the benefit of those who will be listening to this on the podcast. Does anybody want to correct any of my introductions or pronunciations? So some of you spent a lot of time listening to me over the years, and now I want to listen to you. And the first question or topic that I want to pose has to do with positive images of Africa. I think there's a major push in the Africanist community and within the diaspora to project a positive image of Africa. And so on the one hand, this is necessary to confront stereotypes about Africa and misunderstandings and, of course, outright ignorance. But the question is, does this sometimes interfere with the honest assessments that you want to describe about the real conditions on the ground? And maybe to give, you know, one or two examples, one, of course, would be many Americans have been active in promoting investment in Rwanda. Well, just a few days ago, Amnesty International released a report about the widespread detentions and forced disappearances and torture being carried out by Rwandan military intelligence. Do we want to continue to portray Rwanda as this great economic success story if it's such a political rights disaster, perhaps? So just to give you a sense of what I'm thinking about, how do we balance, or how do you balance, this need to confront negative stereotypes but also tell the truth about what's happening back home? Who wants to start?
I'll start.
I'm Patty.
I think that, it definitely, the story of Afghan has to be told in a nuanced, way. It has, we there's a lot of media or lack thereof, of how, Africa is and how it's doing. And we have to also realize that it's a big continent. So, what applies to one country doesn't apply to the other. And in, also portraying that image, that has to be taken into account as well. I would say that for me personally, I don't see, in terms of, portraying Africa in a positive light, interfering with the reality, if you will. In terms of, yes, the way that some people view the continent is in a very stereotypical lens, and they need to be, educated, if you will, just to know what it is. It has its challenges. There are opportunities, and that's how you're supposed to look at the overall picture. You mentioned Rwanda, and I think there needs to be a difference between, when it's between government to government, and also businesses who go there and they look at, the country in terms of economics. They decide to ignore sometimes politics, of course. But, I think there also needs to be, we need to definitely look at it on a, in different, economic, political, social, and take all those into consideration. When you get questions, as somebody from Senegal, from the continent, when you get some questions with your peers, I think you definitely have to, on how the continent is, what they've read. It's your duty, to be able to respond to those, as I said, in a nuanced manner.
I think what I find most disconcerting is that the negative portrayal of Africa leads to negative COVID policy. Like, look at Kony 2012. I wasn't mad because because the organization was downright, absurd. I was mad because they were advocating for a policy change that was detrimental. And they were doing it on behalf of this poor, suffering, sad, whatever you want to call it, continent. And it was just shocking that the limited knowledge that some people have could lead to extremely detrimental. I mean, they were advocating for more U.S. forces underground in Uganda. That to me was outlandish. And these are teenagers in, Austin and wherever, and all over the world. And so I think that's what I find most concerning, is that this stereotype that the continent has just been stuck with for the last few decades is really detrimental for the policies that are initiated in the West on its behalf.
We're already on to Uganda.
Yeah.
Uganda.
Yeah.
I want to speak up.
But, also back to what Carl said, it has to be a bit balanced. Going back to Kony 2012, there's a lot of backlash against it. And one of the responses by the Ugandan government was to release a video on YouTube that say that, oh, no, Uganda's the 2012 Lonely Planet destination here. we have beautiful mountains, beautiful parks, et cetera, and so on. We're the pearl of Africa. But by doing that, they kind of diminish what kind of Kony has done, and they don't kind of acknowledge that the fact that there has been a big problem. They haven't addressed it in the manner that they should have. So their response should be calculated in a way that, fine, Uganda has a lot of other beautiful things that are not, reported in the media, but you can't just abandon one side and only present the other side. So it has to be balanced.
Yeah. Looking at the colonial situation again, I think that was kind of a two-edged sword, because one question that was raised was, there are these debates and the backlash going back and forth. And where are the African voices to respond to this? Where are the people speaking from the continent? So I think that I don't think they necessarily interfere with each other, but I think that as long as there is a positive positive image of Africa, and as long as what is coming out is right, whether or not they're negative or positive, that is what is, it's good that now at least we're getting the true picture of Africa rather than a messed up image of Africa.
Yeah, because the problem is not talking about the problem. It's really acting as if there was nothing else but this issue of poverty and famine and all that. There is something else in Africa. I remember, I'm from Cameroon, but I lived in Mali, Chad, and Guinea. And I graduated from high school in Mali. I went to France. It was not the first time I was going there, but it was my first time going to live there. And I'm supposed to be attending one of the most prestigious schools in the country. And 2 months after I got there, a girl from my school asked me if I was living in the hut before I got to the country, before I got to France. So I thought that is very amazing. That is great if this is a future French presidential. This is great.
I feel like I feel like when I get those comments, I'm just kind of dumbfounded and not know how to respond. Because a friend of mine, a roommate actually, we were talking and she was just like, "Did you escape the war?" And I was just like, "What?" All she knew about me was that I was African. And so she immediately thought that I had escaped the war. And I'm just like, I'm still in shock that people still actually think that, like, it's appropriate. And in this, I mean, that is how ingrained this is, and I don't think we find a way to actually counter it yet.
Yeah, but I think it's, you know, our responsibility, mm-hmm. as well as yours, to really combat that negative stereotype. You've seen examples like in Kenya with Ushahidi, with in Uganda, you know, Makerere University, they developed the first electronic car locally produced in Uganda, mm-hmm. and they're trying to produce it and trying to make some commercial success out of it. So there's those nuggets of great information out there, and it's our responsibility as Africanists, as people who care about the continent, to combat that. It's not going to really happen from a top-down approach, mm-hmm. but if we all do our little bit, we can kind of help add to the momentum.
And I think it's, as Kizito just said, it's about engagement. You know, it's about also being able to be frank with ourselves and say, yes, you know, I don't live in a hut, but also, you know, in all of the countries, we are also a certain class. You know, we all do not grow up the same way. You know, I grew up in a certain way, which is different from, you know, the young person who lives in, you know, a quartier populaire, who lives, you know, in the city, in the sub, you know, it's different. So I think we have to be able to also acknowledge that and say, my problems, you know, it's the continent is vast. It has many countries. Within countries, you also have differences. So you have to be able to, as I said, you know, engage, say, you know, educate people, but also say, you know, be truthful to yourself and say, okay, this is what, you know, well, take my country, Senegal, you know, you definitely have, you know, class differences, you know, people go to school, you know, some people don't go to school, there are problems, you know, X, Y, and Z, what is the government doing, what's the government not doing, what are we doing as people, and also, you know, as I think everyone has said in the panel, being here, or wherever else, being able to, you know, frankly talk to people and tell them this is what my country is about, and you know, and engage them in that discussion.
Let me ask a different kind of question about, you know, misperceptions and so forth. So think about going home, and you're talking to your parents, or better yet, your grandparents, and you explain your political views on the president, and your grandfather says you weren't there for the struggle. And so we see this happening, I think, for example, within the African National Congress. And, you know, one of the tensions within the organization has been that for the generation that was not a part of the defeat of apartheid, they have a very different reference point for forming their political opinions and placing demands on the government and so forth. So tell me about those conversations. What happens when you go home and you talk to your grandparents or your parents, as the case may be? And
I think it's for me, it's with my dad. There's just any opinion that I might have that I might disagree with, it's like, you just don't know. Like, I just would never know. Like, there's a secret, and he's been here since the early 80s, late 70s. So I'm like, you just don't know, you know? I mean, so there's this very, very, like, he just sees me very differently. And so as not being, let's see. So we talk about Biafra a lot in our house because we're Nigerians.